tapes to come out, because otherwise you're going to spoil the second half of the show. So can you please all come out? If there's anybody else in the choir or the orchestra wandering around, can they please come backstage? Just the choir. Get going. Alright, I'll put you back to Bob.
And that was called LaGrange. I've got the microphone back up, which is alright. We're nearly ready on stage, as you can see. Music from Ricky, just a
second. Hey, yes?
Alright, okay. This is music from some time. Everything's together, and we're completely ready. I must say, it's very good to see you, it really is. All I can say, really, I'll leave all the introductions to the group and all the people that you're going to see on stage to Rick. Can I just ask you for a really warm welcome? For Rick Wakeman. Catherine Howell. Thank you. going to do Anne Boleyn, then followed by a new piece that we wrote a little while ago, and then there'll be like a short intermission, and then we'll somehow try and get the orchestra on. There you go. Anyway, this is Anne Boleyn. The story begins on the 24th of May, 1863, in Hamburg. Professor Lidenbrook and his nephew Axel discover an old parchment in a 12th century book called Heimskringla, a chronicle of the Norwegian princes who ruled over Iceland. A portion of this parchment, when decoded into Latin and translated by Axel, proves to be written by an alchemist of the 6th century and reads as follows. Descend into the crater of Schneppesjökull, over which the shadow of Skataris falls before the calends of July, bold traveller, and you will reach the centre of the earth. I have done this, signed Arne Saknussemm. Schneppels is a 5,000-foot high mountain in Iceland, an extinct volcano, its last eruption having been 6 centuries earlier. And so, from Hamburg to Iceland, the journey begins.
Thank you. Through the lava gallery, which gently sloped until they reached the intersection of two roads. Without hesitation, Professor Lidenbrook chose the eastern tunnel, and so the journey continued through a succession of arches appearing before them as if they were the aisles of a Gothic cathedral, the walls enhanced with impressions of rock weeds and mosses from the Silurian epoch. Had come to a dead end. With 3 days' walk back to the fork to find Arne Saknussemm's original route, they found their water rations were limited to 1 day. Knowing their only chance of finding water was on that route, they set off for the fork, and there they fell almost lifeless on the third day. After sleep, they continued down the other tunnel in their quest for water. And whilst searching on his own, Hans the guide heard the sound of water thundering behind a granite wall, and with a pickaxe attacked the wall so as to allow a stream of boiling water to enter and to cool their tunnel. Not only had they found life in the water, they continued down the other tunnel in their quest for water. And whilst searching on his own, Hans the guide heard the sound of water thundering behind a granite wall, and with a pickaxe attacked the wall so as to allow a stream of boiling water to enter and to cool their tunnel. Not only had they found life in the water, but a flowing guide to the center of the earth. They called the stream the Hansbach. Of all the incidents of the journey. And unworthy as he felt, he knelt in fervent prayer. And then in panic, he ran blindly through a tunnel, only to reach a dead end where he fell panting for breath. In the darkness, he cried. Voices, voices. He heard voices, his uncle's voice. And due to the shape of the gallery and the conducting power of the rock, his uncle's voice was uncannily traveling around the walls. By means of their chronometers, they discovered that they were 4 miles apart. And so Axel set about the task of rejoining the professor and their guide.
Oh! Goblin, friends of Rooney's seen his last. Contemplating what his life's been worth. Of caverns where no other man has ever been. Silurian epoch haunts me as my grave.
With the professor and the guide. And looking around him, he saw an ocean stretching as far as the eye could see. A giant forest of mushrooms, a line of huge cliffs, and strange clouds hung overhead as he lay on a deeply indented shore of golden sand strewn with shells. For a moment, he thought he was back on the surface of the earth, but soon realized that they had reached a world within a world. Consisting of a mast made of two staves lashed together, a yard made of a third, and a sail borrowed from their stock of rugs. They set sail from the harbour, Port Graubin, named after Axel's fiancée. With a northwesterly wind propelling them along at about 3 miles an hour, silvery beams of light reflected here and there by drops of spray produced luminous points in the eddy created by the raft. Soon, all land was lost to view. and 5 days out to sea, they witnessed a terrifying battle between two sea monsters. One having the snout of a porpoise, the head of a lizard, and the teeth of a crocodile, an ichthyosaurus. And the other, the mortal enemy of the first, a serpent with a turtle shell, the plesiosaurus. Clouds formed heavily in the south, like huge wool packs heaped up in picturesque disorder. Under the influence of the breezes, they merged together, growing darker, forming a single menacing mass. The raft lay motionless on the sluggish, waveless sea, and in silence, they waited for the storm.
Thank you.
peaceful reefs, they lay sheltered from the pouring rain beneath a few overhanging rocks where they ate and slept. The next day, all trace of the storm had disappeared. What remained of their stock seemed intact. Checking the compass brought only heartbreak, as it showed that a change of wind during the storm had returned them to just a few miles north of Port Broadbent. Deciding to try and find the original route, they advanced with difficulty over granite fragments mingled with flint, quartz, and alluvial deposits, eventually reaching a plain covered with bones like a huge cemetery. A mile further on, they reached the edge of a vast forest made up of vegetation of the tertiary period. Tall palms were linked by a network of inextricable creepers. A carpet of moss covered the ground. The leaves were colorless, everything having a brownish hue. Exploring the forest, they discovered a herd of gigantic animals, mastodons, which were being marshaled by a primitive human being, a Proteus. Standing over 12 feet high, he brandished an enormous bow, a crook worthy of this antediluvian shepherd. Instinctively, they made towards the Liddenbrook Sea. Discovering a rusty dagger on the beach and the carved initials of the explorer before them on a slab of granite, they realized that they were once again treading the route of Arne Saknussemm. Following a short sea journey around a cape, they came ashore where a dark tunnel plunged deep into rock. Venturing down, their progress was halted by a piece of rock blocking their way. After deciding to blow their way through and setting the charge, they put out to sea for safety. With the explosion, the rocks before them opened like a curtain, and a bottomless pit appeared in the shore. The explosion had caused an earthquake. The abyss had opened up and the sea was pouring into it. Down and down they plunged into the huge gallery, but on regaining their senses, found their raft rising at a tremendous speed. Trapped in the shaft of an active volcano, they rose through the ages of man to be finally expelled out on a mountainside riddled with tiny lava streams. Their journey completed, they found themselves 3,000 miles from their original starting point in Iceland. They had entered by one volcano and come out by another. And with the blue mountains of Calabria in the east, they walked away from the mountain that had returned them, the frightening Mount Etna.